Welcome to Back on the Grind, a podcast about life, music, people, and the stories that bring us closer. I'd like to thank all you folks who've been listening for a while now. It's been almost a year since we started the podcast, and our listenership has grown. We've gotten lots of great feedback, positive ratings, and encouragement, so thank you for all that support. Additionally, I want to say thank you to the folks who signed up for Patreon to support the podcast even further. In order to create each episode, we were losing money. There's various kinds of back-end expenses that come with producing a podcast. But recently, thanks to our Patreon subscribers, we're finally breaking even. And that's a big relief for us. If that didn't happen, we'd still do this podcast, to be honest. I'd pay out of pocket to put this out. But it's such a relief to know that we have additional support from the larger community out there. It removes some of the financial burden, and it lets us know that what we're doing is worthwhile for people. It's encouraging and inspires us to continue. If you're interested in joining our Patreon to get additional episodes, some free patches, and soon we'll be putting out t-shirts for all our Patreon subscribers, you can get more info at patreon.com/backonthegrind. There's a link in the episode show notes. And if you don't want to join Patreon, that's fine, but you can support us in other ways, like sharing your favorite episode with your friends, or leaving us a rating or review on whatever platform you listen on. Word of mouth is the backbone of this podcast. It's the way we found our footing in the larger community. And the more the podcast grows, the easier it becomes for us to get the guests on that you want to hear from. For today's episode, my co-host, Folk Punk Dad, sits down with the folk punk band Tall Travis. It's the first time we're having an interview with more than two people. The entire band is on. Six people, and they talk largely about the logistics of being in a band, especially with members spread out across different states. They talk about recording, navigating the decision-making process in the band, advice is offered on how to start a band if you'd like to, and at the end, the conversation transitions into the topics of superstition and magic and whimsy. So enjoy this episode of Back in the Grind, as Folk Punk Dad brings you closer to Tall Travis.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. I am on here with all six members of Tall Travis. Could y'all introduce yourselves one at a time and tell us what your role in the band is?
Yeah, hi, I'm Justin and I play trumpet.
I'm Elliot and I play guitar.
I'm Finn and I play ukulele and banjo and sing.
I'm Teddy, and I play the bass, and I sing.
I'm Pax, I play washboard, and I sing.
I'm Casey, I play fiddle and mandolin, and I sing.
And Justin also sings.
I sing sometimes.
That's excellent. I just want our listeners to know that right now, Tall Travis has a stuffed cow. Is that a cow?
Yes.
They're passing it around. So whoever is speaking holds this stuffed cow, and it's really excellent.
The cow's name is Clover, and actually you can put him in the microwave and use him as a heat pack, too. Oh,
that is excellent. So y'all are on tour right now, is that right? Not really? Or are you recording right now? Is that what's going on?
We're recording. We've had for the past 3 years this tradition of we get together in January and we record some music and we'll usually do like a little celebration show at the end of it. And this year we also had like a run of shows last weekend kind of leading into it to get us all in practice, learn some new songs and stuff. So we're coming off that and in the middle of recording.
That sounds like a great system. I know that y'all live in different places, and I'm really curious, where does everybody live?
We initially met at the University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont, and currently two of us live in Burlington, and two of us live about a half hour outside of Burlington. And then Elliot here is living in Ithaca, New York, and Pax is in Boston.
Kudos to y'all for keeping the band going even after people have moved away. How does it feel to be able to maintain those connections and momentum with the band?
I know for me personally, it's like, it feels great because I I get really sad when I don't live in the same area as my friends, because I'm really bad at like texting people or keeping up with people. So the fact that we can all still continue to be as close as we are and exchange ideas from so far away is really something special.
And it's sort of something that like I sometimes forget. I feel like that the band has kind of always been this way to a degree. Like I was at the University of Vermont my freshman year a couple of years ago, and like three or four of us were there at that time, but then Teddy didn't join the band until after I had moved to Ithaca, and Casey, who's my brother, was in high school at the time, so he wasn't there. And so like we had a little bit of performing, I guess, as a college band, but we weren't very good at that. And as people sort of moved further away, we got like more in the swing of things. And so this has always kind of been the normal for us.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that basically since we've been having really much of a degree of success at all, we've been spread out like that. Like not only was I separate from the beginning, but like the first real sort of actual legitimate gig we got was a music festival in Connecticut in, I guess, the fall of 2021 that we didn't even play at until Elliot had already left UVM. So we were already living in three different states when we had our first like legitimate
gig.
Yeah.
Are there any less obvious obstacles as far as navigating being a band in different states? You know, there are some pretty apparent ones like, oh, it's harder to get together to practice and record and that kind of thing. But is there anything people might not think of that you're like, oh, actually this is actually pretty tough?
I feel like especially in like DIY music spaces, it can be harder to get a foothold when you're not like available kind of on a weekly basis. Like a lot of the bands I know in Ithaca will just be playing out every weekend and they're back and forth to all of these places. And so they sort of began local and then spread out regionally. And we've sort of by necessity had to do the opposite of like, I don't even know when the first time we played like two consecutive shows in the same town was, but it's much harder to like get to develop connections and friendships and stuff within a particular music scene when we're like all over the place.
I would also say though that as well as the difficulties, there's definitely some benefits of being spread out, which really comes into play, especially when we're trying to book shows or do like traveling around. So last summer we went on a little bit of a tour for like 10 days or so, and it was super helpful to have people who kind of had connections in all these different cities around the Northeast, because we were able to work with people who we were familiar with and we'd already done things with before and find shows in several different states.
I also think a big part of this band's vibe is the fact that we're all our own individuals, and there's a lot of us, and we all bring our different experiences to the band. And I almost think it part of what makes us who we are is the fact that we come together after time apart and do shows and just are always bringing something new.
I think it can also make the vibe really good at a show that we get to be at where we haven't seen each other in a bit, because we're all just so happy to be together and playing together.
Yeah.
And I think that comes across.
Or some approximation that, not an approximation of being happy. Finn and Justin live together and, Casey and Teddy still go to the same school. So we have to see each other from time to time.
Yeah.
But it is really nice to like come together, and
that's awesome. Yeah, I was gonna ask if there were benefits to living in different states and cities too, and it sounds like there definitely are, and that you all have found effective and life giving ways to navigate that. It sounds like it's really working for you.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think there will ever be a time when you're all living in the same city or state again?
Relevant.
We would love to live in the same state. Yeah, we're talking about these benefits, but at the end of the day, we would love to live in the same state as each other.
Can I talk about the song? The song that's about that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the songs we've been recording this week is about a someday when we're all living in the same place as each other.
Yeah. There's very loose plans that have been thrown around for a couple of years of starting a commune or something. We'll see. We're a couple years out from that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
I promise not one of the kinds that turns into a cult, though. You don't promise that. Oh,
you could start an anti-cult.
Yeah.
We have a lot of brushes with cults, for better or worse. Not joining them, but sort of encountering them in the world.
Begrudgingly.
Sure.
Guys, let's observe the cow.
That's part of the cult rule. Just kidding. oh my gosh. I just had an image of all of us observing the cow in a very worshipful way. Yes, they are holding up the cow as if it was Simba. So, speaking of songwriting, I'd love to hear a little bit about the songwriting process. Do you write songs mostly individually or collectively or a mix of both?
We each write our own songs and then bring them to the band and arrange them together, with some exceptions. Like the song that we recorded for this podcast is, I wrote the music and Pax wrote the words. Cool. Yeah, and actually one song, my sister wrote the lyrics and I wrote,
oh, nice.
I wrote the tune.
Yeah. The way that me and Pax kind of do it, I mean, we haven't written a song together, but our process is similar in that we come up with lyrics, we have like a melody in our head, and then we're like, Finn, please bring your ukulele. And then we're just kind of like, like trying to figure out like the chords to go along with the melody that we've like come up with in our head.
Yeah.
Finn's very nice to help us with that.
Overall, though, I think that the important core of any song comes from one person, and then it's the rest of the band's job to sort of suss out the best form of that idea.
Mm-hmm. And Justin often has a big role in that.
Yeah, I don't usually write like the songs to start with. My job is to sort of just like take them up a notch.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I'm like the icing on the cake kind of. But yeah, I'm the only member who hasn't had like a songwriting credit, but I've kind of like added things throughout, little like there's little bits that are mine throughout all of them. That's kind of my role.
That's
like
awesome.
You're sort of talking yourself down. Justin has like a pretty strong background in music theory and will write like all of these orchestrated parts where when we're recording, we'll have like four or five horns that he records all of them and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say the band without Justin would be like soup without salt or any spices.
A lot of food metaphors here.
We haven't eaten lunch.
I also have not eaten lunch.
Oh my God.
Well, sounds like your songwriting process and your collaboration process really reflects what you were talking about earlier with each person bringing their own unique self to the band. And I think it's so great that it sounds like you have a community that values the collective and the individual, which I think is really important. So many communities or societies tend to go to one extreme or the other. So it sounds like you all have a really nice balance there.
I feel like we very much value not congealing into one person. Like we are very much like celebrate our differences. One such example that comes to my mind is last year during recording week, we made a, it was like a joke, but like, it was like written out at like, are three essentials for each of us for recording.
Oh, God.
So like mine was like, it's okay to be a little bit fucked up. It needs a groovy beat, you know, like just quantize it. But like I forget what the other ones were.
They're all very, like, nerdy.
Yeah, nerdy stuff. But
mine is the funniest, so I'm going to share mine. It is open reaper, close reaper, open muse score, trumpet block harmonies.
And then flugelhorn if
to
you're...
To cut through the mix!
Yes.
Reaper is a program for recording, and muse score is a program for writing sheet music. So he, like, opens the actual recording and then closes it and goes to writing sheet music.
Nice. Well, do you all have any other DIY recording techniques or philosophies that you want to share?
Yeah, that's something that's sort of evolved over time. The very first album we did, Finn at that time had the most recording experience. I don't know if you want to speak to how we did that.
Yeah, I'd been making recordings on my iPad on GarageBand, like, all through high school. And so I arguably had the most recording experience. We recorded the whole album on pretty much one microphone, one track at a time. We sang songs with our masks on because it was in the pandemic. We recorded with an amplifier playing, like, MIDI automated beat that, like, can still be kind of heard in final tracks. It was a whole mess.
We only had one pair of headphones, I'm pretty sure. And so, like, you and I were trying to record together.
Yeah, like, one person would wear the headphones and the other person would just listen to the other person.
Yeah. Since then, the first January album that we did, we got together and we recorded, again, very piecemeal, but slightly nicer mics. There were more people in the band by then, and it was more of like a sit down and do a bunch of stuff in a week process. And then we wound up getting it sent off to be mixed. Weren't super happy with the outcome, so we were like,
don't know Adam.
No disrespect to Adam. Adam was great.
Who mixed our second album.
Yes. But we decided to sort of do everything in-house since then, which we did last year. And then this year we've been trying to do as much as we can pseudo live. We set up like a whole bunch of mattresses in the guest room vertically to like divide us, and hung up blankets on the walls. And it's been working pretty well. It's like a very different mindset to go into it, where everyone, we all have to know the songs really well. In the past, we often come into a recording session not really knowing the songs, or one person will know the songs, teach them to the others, we write our parts, and we don't actually know the full form of the song until the recording is done. And this has sort of been the opposite of that, which has its advantages and disadvantages, but I think has been largely fruitful so far.
And with this particular recording process, I think it's also been really beneficial, and I've been enjoying how much more collaborative we get to be when we're all together for every song in the room. And like, there have been a bunch of parts where I'm playing something and I'm able to actually be like, oh, what do you think I should do here? Instead of just completely finishing the entire track and then sending it off and saying, is this good?
It is interesting that we did last year's album totally piece by piece. It was like the most one person at a time we've ever done, and it came out really well. And then this year we're doing the opposite of that. But I felt like we missed the organicness. And so, yeah, that's what we're going for.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It can be really difficult to capture that live energy if you're not recording live. I'm looking forward to hearing the work you're doing now.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of navigating band practices and recording, what is your band decision-making process like?
The band, it was my idea, but I think we've always tried to not have the band have leaders. In a sort of an anarchist philosophical way. So it's a whole thing in the band, making decisions by consensus as much as possible.
You know, we recognize people's individual strengths. Like, Elliot is super good with sound, and like when we go to like a DIY show, like Elliot kind of takes over and like helps set up our sound. And then like Justin, because he has like music theory, experience. He does a lot of, like we said, like arrangement on like Muse score and stuff and like writing stuff out. Yeah, like everybody has their own strengths. So it's not necessarily that one person is in charge. We just like delegate off like, okay, we know that you're good at this. Can you help us do that? If that makes sense.
I guess the way when there's decisions that like everyone has a role in, it goes is we'll like sit down and we'll have a discussion about it, which is obviously easier when we're in the same place. And then there's a lot of like implicit respect of other people's experience with it and stuff. So even if we sit down and like the decision that, I don't know, the feeling that Finn has about an arrangement is something of something is like very different from my inclination. Finn has like this very extensive history writing and arranging music and stuff. So we're more inclined to go along with that, but it's very much like everyone kind of has to be on board for us to go ahead and do something, which I think is in a lot of ways a strength. It can be frustrating and slow sometimes, but ultimately we come to better decisions, I think, as a result.
I definitely wouldn't want it any other way. And it's a huge part of making the band what it is. The fact that, yeah, we all have as much of a voice as we choose to have.
And it's sort of like a power and responsibility going hand in hand. When we were putting together the tour, for example, a couple of people were like, okay, I will figure out gigs for these cities and stuff. And everyone was like, okay, you're the one who stepped up to do that. So you get to like make whatever judgment calls need to be made with that and kind of have final say on it. Whoever's doing something, whoever offers to make something happen, we all kind of defer to them for how that thing should happen.
Yeah, that's great that you all have that process of people stepping up and using their gifts and their skills where it makes sense, while also maintaining that anarchist ideology of consensus and communal decision making. And I'm with you on the wouldn't want to have it any other way. I can totally relate. Speaking of anarchist philosophy, do you all have more thoughts about DIY art or deprofessionalism, which is something that Elliot mentioned when we were communicating?
Yeah, I think for all of us in kind of varying ways, the DIY music and art scene has been like this really positive thing. In Ithaca, I've gotten involved with a collective that puts on shows with local bands, touring acts and stuff, which has been really cool to like shape the spaces and like strive to be inclusive and accepting and stuff while we're doing that. That's been a very positive thing, and it's really cool in folk punk, at least for me, that like a lot of the bands that I've like looked up to and admired for years are people that like we've met at shows and had conversations with, and they're like very approachable and down to earth. I mean, that was how we got in touch with Pepe originally. We were covering a song and wrote to him to like get permission before publishing it, and sort of just went off of that. So like it's very cool the kind of egalitarian nature of the folk punk scene and the ways in which kind of anyone can get involved with it.
And just while we're talking about how we first gotten in touch with Pepe, we had just been dealing with getting the rights to cover This Land Is Your Land by Woody Guthrie on our second album, which it's just insane to us that a record label is still like gatekeeping who can play This Land Is Your Land. Like, and so we emailed Pepe and we got like the best email ever about, you know, how it was basically fine.
Yeah. Just have fun with it and send us the recording.
We emailed Pepe to cover
Vampires Are Posers by Ramshackle Glory.
I think what he said was like, yeah, have fun with it. If you guys end up making like $1 million off of it, like, could I have some, at least some of the money? But like, I don't really care.
Press some seven inch
vinyls for the kids.
For the kids.
Yes, for the kids. That's what it was.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would expect nothing less from Pepe. So you all were mentioning how meaningful the DIY scene and the band has been. And I was wondering if anyone wanted to speak to the role that the band has played in your life, in your personal life, in your growth, your experiences. Yeah, what has this band meant to you? How has it impacted you?
I mean, this band has impacted me in many, many ways. But when I was in high school, when I was involved in music, it was very like organized. I played violin, so I played like only classical music, and then I was in marching band, so it was like very like cut dry of like what I had to do. I just did music by instruction. And through the 2.5 years I've been in this band, 2 years, I feel like I've realized that, you know, music is a totally different medium than I've ever been taught, and that I can really express myself, and there's no right or wrong way to do it, and that anybody can do it, because I don't know music theory at all, but I've still written some, I would say, fairly good songs without it. Thank you. And also, not on the topic of music, but I feel like with our decision making and like having to live with each other in like tight spaces all the time and like driving with each other for a lot, I've really developed a new sense and appreciation for like patience for your friends and unconditional love. You know, like there have been times where we have gotten grumpy with each other, but it's been resolved because we all have a mutual love and respect for each other. And I've never really experienced that in any other friend group besides this one. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, a kind of little bit of a similarish thing. My background comes from like jazz, and that was what I was majoring in. And it's kind of a very different vibe than this kind of thing. Like jazz can be like kind of cutthroat and competitive sometimes. And like for me, coming out of that into this, like such an accepting, more like kind of friendly, maybe you put it. I wouldn't say jazz is unfriendly, but yeah, it's kind of, it's very different kind of like music. Not, you don't like, it's, you don't need to be the best. And I've kind of been like hard on myself, like needing to always be the best trumpet player around. And I think it's more, it's a communal, it's an activity. It's something you do with other people that like benefits everyone. And I think, yeah, this kind of helped me understand that. Also, side thing is that these guys play in terrible keys for trumpet, and it's gotten better at all of those.
So, I'm so sorry.
We love you, Justin.
We love
They're
you.
Like, let's play an A. And I'm like, that's actually B for me. I don't want to play with that many sharps. All right.
I think a big part of how music is important to my life is that I feel like being in a flow state in activities that I do is a super important thing for me, for like my mental health and enjoying my life. And this is one of the main places I get that flow state performing. It just feels really good to me to play music with these guys. And yeah, to have that whole experience just be elevated to a level that it couldn't be on my own. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would say like the sort of the ability of the band to turn ideas that you have into like something that you couldn't create on your own has been really cool for me. I don't sing, and it's really nice to like be able to come and offer, be able to like work on recording and play music and stuff surrounded by like some of the best songwriters who I've ever met.
Oh, and, nice. Stop it.
And that's like really cool. And I realized we didn't address this at all when you mentioned it previously, but the idea of deprofessionalism and like that these things that are sort of are highly like looked up to, highly regarded in society, being kind of gated off and like, you can only do this if you have such and such qualifications or such and such like credentials. And deconstructing that into, no, this is something that anyone can do. And we can do, like, not only despite not having, for most of us, like, formal music training, or for any of us, like, a real professional background.
Budget.
Professional budget. And stuff.
Yeah.
and, like, create stuff not only in spite of that, but, like, that's informed by that. And I think in a lot of ways benefits from it. Is really cool.
This band is one of the most wonderful gifts life has given me. Sometimes I feel like if I stop making jokes, people will stop looking at me. And it's such a wonderful, beautiful thing to have all of these people really passing me the mic and letting me talk my shit, and to be able to do that for all of them as well is just such a gift that I'm thankful for every day.
Pax writes incredible songs, and we're very, very sorry for almost knocking a tree over on them last weekend.
It missed, and that's what matters.
It was damn close. I got so scared. Oh my god.
Wow, that was all really lovely to hear. So I think there are probably a lot of people out there, maybe even people listening to this podcast, who might want to start a band, but don't know where to start, don't know how to do it. So if you had advice for people who wanted to start and sustain a band, what advice would you give them?
I mean, the way this band started, as I recall, Finn can probably offer a more detailed version of the story, is we were in a folk music club in college, and Finn came to me after one of our meetings and said, so I'm starting a folk punk band. Do you want in? And I was like, yeah, who else is in it? He's like, so far, just you. And the story I later learned is he had written three songs, and it's like, these sound folk punk. We should do something with that. And so, like,
actually the idea predates the songs. I went skiing, cross country skiing, instead of other possibilities on Valentine's Day 2021. And that's like a really great environment for ideas to form. And I was like, you know, I think I know enough musicians that I could put together a folk punk band. And folk punk wasn't like my main genre. And I was writing songs that weren't folk punk at all at the time. And I have for the band now since. But at that time, I was like, that seems achievable to me. And I was like, and we're going to have three songs. And I had like the titles of the songs in my head. And then I wrote them. And then I got the band members.
I did not know that the titles predated the songs.
Yeah.
Or maybe I did.
What were the songs?
Right.
It was Raw Milk is Medicine, Robin Snow, and I Like the Size of My Bed. And actually, when the idea formed, it was like, I Like the Size of My Bed was like a title and an idea. Raw Milk is Medicine was just a title because I saw a sticker on a pole that said that. And I was like, that sounds like a folk punk song. And Robin Snow was just a song about a bird was the idea.
So in that sense, it's sort of something I think that you can just talk into existence. You can say, I want to start a band, and I have song titles, and that is something. And so you talk to your friends, and you know, you start playing open mics. The first places that we played out were the dining hall at our school.
Unprompted, unasked for.
Yeah. And we quickly graduated to the outdoor kind of green.
Circle of Stones.
The Circle of Stones outside of my
called the
dorm.
Amphitheater.
So, yeah, sort of something you can just say that you are, and then as soon as you have a song, start playing at places.
Yeah. I was the last member to join the band. Like they said that their first gig was at a music festival in Connecticut in 2021. And Elliot was like, I have a free ticket. Do you want to come see my band? And I was like, hell yeah. And then one of my now roommates had mentioned that I played the bass. But the thing is that I took like a year or two of lessons in high school. I've never played it with another like group at all. And I just kind of did it for fun. And I would say that I had a bass. I wouldn't say that I played a bass. And Finn was like, do you want to come to a practice? We need a bass player. And I showed up and I was like sweating buckets because I was like, these guys are going to realize that I'm not an actual musician and that I like am not good at the bass. But then I actually became a part of the band and actually know how to like read like bass music and like can come up with my own stuff now. And so really, if you just have a dream or if you're like, I want to be in a band enough, you can totally do it.
Yeah, Teddy, you're awesome at the bass. But also, I think that sort of emphasizes how there's really no barrier that's too large to being a musician or being a band or anything. Like for me and Elia also, we started playing music and started performing together when we were like probably 8 and 11 or something. We were tiny. Like I really don't think that you can be too young or too untrained or too anything to be a musician, because you can always make some kind of thing that could be called music, and you can always just go out in public and play it, and people might like it, and you'll have fun.
Yeah, and if you're young enough, you can take advantage of the cute little kid factor.
That's true.
which definitely benefited us back then. But also, I think approaching it with humility is an important thing, that as much as, like, even if you're the one starting the band, as much as you shape the band shapes you. I also, like, I listened to a smattering of bands similar to what we do, but it was kind of playing this music that really got me involved with, or that really got me interested in the style that we play. And then we'll wind up, Justin will come to us with like this really, I don't even know what the term would be, like this really out there jazzy part. And we're like, yeah, that's cool. And sort of like the band's identity and the, like, the styles that it occupies and stuff is this very fluid thing. And you kind of have to let that happen, I think, to have a positive experience doing music.
I just wanted to briefly say that I think that this band and probably most bands are more than the sum of their parts. And I don't know about other people, but I kind of view Tall Travis as its own entity, which is kind of out of all of our controls to a certain extent.
I think we've played a gig without every band member at some point.
Have we done one without you?
We bust without him.
Yeah, we've
yeah,
bust,
you bust without, yeah, without, yeah, me. Anyways, just to finish answering the question, I think we could offer some practical advice as well, which part of it we already touched on. Play music like in public. Like, busking on the street is great if you're trying to start a band.
And you'll make connections.
People will come up to you. Yeah, you can talk to people. We mentioned we just stood up and played in our dining hall and like on campus. So that's a really good option. And then another good tip I would give is find bands that you like that are a little bit more well-known than you, and then ask if you could open for them. That was huge for us. We opened for Rent Strike, and that was a really amazing experience.
Have the cow. Radically accept that you're going to bomb in front of people.
Yeah.
I've bombed in front of people so many times that it doesn't scare me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've already fucked up the worst that I'm going to fuck up, and I did it when I was 14, so we're good. Accept it, learn from it. You'll get less scared of it.
Yeah. And also sort of cultivating differing skill sets if you're in a band already, or if you're trying to start a band. If you have some background in computers, you can learn to record music. That is like an incredibly valuable skill to bring to any group. Or you can learn to do live sound, or you can learn music theory and stuff. And then you can join a band with people who don't have those skills, or bring together people who have other skill sets, and yeah, create something that's more than the sum of its parts.
At the end of the day, I think the most important and the hardest part is finding people who can get along and people who are as committed to it as you are. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you all come upon the name Tall Travis?
Well, there's...
Okay.
Yeah, just go for it.
Okay. So... Tall Travis is actually a member of the band.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Sort of, yeah. Spiritually.
Spiritually. Yeah. We had a big discussion about before this interview
how do we approach Travis?
Talk about Travis?
So Travis is a person. Travis is a concept. Travis is a mindset, a lifestyle, a fitness routine, a diet. Travis is very tall.
Yeah. Without a doubt, Travis is tall. That we can say.
The mythology of Travis has sort of evolved over the course of the band. Travis, first name is Tall. For context, Tall.
Yeah,
Travis,
Mr. Travis.
Mixed. Yeah.
And he happens to be tall too.
But
yeah. Coincidentally.
Well,
he brought us all together back when we were in high school. Sent subliminal messaging, said to learn such and such instrument, and then go to this school, and then join this club, and then and here we are.
So the story goes.
Where so the story right goes. Now? He's, I think, in prison in the Midwest for some sort of, I don't know what exactly.
I don't know. He's been writing us though.
Didn't he handcuff himself to some sort of machinery?
I think so. Right.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's sort of been a big part of the band, the idea that you can, it's a multimedia project, you can just lie.
We're not lying, though.
Right.
This is real.
I think that something that comes to mind for me is just because something is in your imagination doesn't mean that it's not real.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
agreed.
A great thought to have.
Yeah, I mean, you all just made Tall Travis very real for me. Yeah, that's awesome.
The sort of thing that, like, in sort of a curmudgeon-y way, I think there is a trend in society that obviously, like, has a lot of good parts, a lot of upsides towards the homogenization of culture and the elimination of the role of myths in people's day-to-day lives. And that, like, decline in superstition has in a lot of ways, like, led to a more accepting culture and a more heterogeneous culture in terms of identities and stuff, but also there's sometimes a bit of magic that, like, gets lost when you take things too much at face value or too literally. And so I think part of our, insofar as we have, like, a metaphysical mission in addition to, like, playing music, our goal, our mission is to bring a little more whimsy and a little more nonsense into the world.
And some magic.
Yeah.
And some magic.
Magic. Yeah. I think kind of connected to that idea is the concept that sort of magic, like you're saying, can very much be real. And magic is really just anything that you don't understand. So I don't entirely understand how this band works. And I think it is more than all of our individual selves. So really there is some entity that is Tall Travis, and he is out there.
Tall Travis is an emergent quality.
How do you think people can maintain their own sense of magic and mystery?
I am a wildlife biology major at UVM, and I'm going to get a BS in wildlife biology. And honestly, the more, like, this is just an example, but the more I learn about, like, ecology and just the way that the world works, the more and more I feel, like, spiritually connected to it. Like, sometimes there are just simply, like, you can debate theories as much as you want about science or about the way that we live, but sometimes it's just nice to be like, but what if humans are not meant to perceive that? You know, I kind of just use it, like, it's very comforting to me to know that there are different ways to perceive the world, and, you know, like, trees perceive the world way differently than we do, birds perceive the world way differently than we do, and so there are certain aspects that I just don't think that humans are supposed to comprehend, and it's okay to just leave that up to the powers and the spirits and the science that be that we just cannot describe.
Yeah, and I think sort of going back to the homogenization of culture and the way the world works, a lot of us, or most of us, are very scientifically minded, and, you know, we study plant science and animal science and all these different things and see a lot of value in that. But it's also very important to understand that Western science is not the only way to understand how the world works. And in the current day, it's really taken over and become so ubiquitous that it's got this radical monopoly, and it's often very difficult to be taken seriously if you're not doing things through a European scientific lens, which really sucks.
Yeah. Honestly, music too, like Western music theory.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like this is, yeah, it's definitely a through line that runs through all sorts of things. I feel like I'm not a big believer in things that aren't real. And I feel like for me, whimsy is more of a practice. I find a lot of value in doing things that adventure, I feel like, is what I'm trying to talk about. Like,
yeah.
Adventuring in my life, trespassing,
etc. It sounds like having a sense of whimsy and magic is directly tied to action for you.
Yeah.
Yes,
definitely. I think that a lot of us, you know, all of us share like this sense of adventure and wanting to like go out into the world and just do stuff. I spend a great deal of time building things. And I have trouble articulating why I do it. This fall I built like a big effigy in my backyard. I don't know why I did that, but it's the sort of thing that like, I don't know, committing to like running with those impulses or moments of inspiration, I think is one way to like, to cultivate whimsy, and then doing that as part of a community where other people see it and feed off of it and bring their own weird ideas and stuff to the table. Yeah.
To be your best and most authentic self, you don't have to understand why you do things to do them.
I remember when I was first getting to know Elliot, there was an amazing moment when I was like, do you ever just like end up going through a swamp and like you're just like clawing through sticks and like you get your feet wet and you just like end up in that situation when you're out and about? And Elliot was like, oh yeah, all the time. And it was like there was a moment of solidarity I had never felt before.
Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation. I really appreciate y'all taking the time to be on the podcast. We are recording this in January, but I don't think this podcast is airing till probably April. Is there anything around the time frame of April that you would want to promote or plug? Do you know what's going to be going on? Do you know when your album is supposed to be released or anything like that?
We do and we don't. A lot of that depends on what my timeline for mixing winds up being, which depends on how busy I am during the semester. Around April, maybe May at the latest, we should have an album coming out, or either an EP or an album. We're also not sure about that. But if you keep an eye out, we have social media, Tall Travis Band, I think for everything.
Yeah.
Which we begrudgingly use. And we will have an album coming out. We do shows pretty regularly around the Northeast.
For everyone listening, you know, follow Tall Travis Band, and be on the lookout for more from these awesome people. Thank you all so much.
Follow the closest bands to you, whoever they are.
Yeah, get involved with your local scene.
Go to local shows.
Yeah.
Go watch bands you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You may be surprised. I've been surprised. Delighted all the time.
And thank you guys so much for having us on this.
Oh my God.
We're so honored to be on this podcast along with so many other incredible bands and musicians.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care, y'all.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Back in the Grind. If you want to connect with Tall Travis, we have links in the episode show notes for you. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, you can reach out to us directly at podcast@backonthegrindrecords.com. The email is also in the show notes. We're coming up on 1 year of doing this podcast. It's an exciting time. I sort of can't believe it's been a year already, but I'm glad we made it this far. And I hope we continue to grow and we can support you to grow as well. It's really why we do this podcast. We want to offer some value to our listeners to help them connect with bands that they love, bands that they can come to love, and to help them find some footing as they move through their own lives. If there's any topics you want us to talk about, please reach out and just let us know. We do this for you. So until next time, stay free.